Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini, the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn, and the Office of Mission Ministry Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as I utilize the information we provide today, take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcome. And one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special month, August, which is designated as National Wellness Month. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Foss Ruggiero. Foss' professional career spans over 40 years and is diversified and compelling as it has consistently established new and exciting cutting-edge counseling programs in its pursuit of professional excellence and personal life enhancement. He is a clinical trainer and a therapist who has worked in a variety of settings, including clinics for deaf children, prisons, nursing homes, substance abuse centers, inpatient facilities, major corporations, both nationally and internationally, and he is the president of the Community Psychological Center in Bangor, Pennsylvania. He is also the author of the great and timely book, The Fix Your Anxiety Handbook. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, boss.
Thanks so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from where you're speaking this morning.
Well, I'm in, as you said, Bangor, Pennsylvania, which is eastern Pennsylvania. I'm about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Manhattan and a couple hours from Philly. So I'm kind of out in the country and centered close enough to come in and do some damage.
Oh, wow. You just made the listeners and I very, very jealous. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of God's country. That is for sure. Well, sorry to say, we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking about this amazing career you've had, this incredible book you've written. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. The term anxiety, it means different things to different people. For purposes of our discussion today, how would you like to define anxiety?
You know, it's the most important first question to ask, Greg. I think, you know, when we talk about anxiety, we think about what the brain's doing and my God, I'm going crazy and I'm afraid of this thing coming up and that's going to happen. But really, when I talk about anxiety, I urge people to start looking at the physical part of it first. You know, it's a body thing. If you don't ever get anxiety without your body feeling tense and all those kind of, you can feel it coming along. And then often the event passes and you realize you're still in tense. You know, and so I'm trying to get people to learn how to calm that body down, get that body healthy, get it calmed down first, and then your emotions and your brain follow. But it's primarily a physical thing. It's a product of some neurotransmitter imbalance in a lot of people. Brains don't shut off when we'd like them to. So, you know, I always go physical first, and I have great success working with anxiety because people who follow that theme, they start to say, "My God, I could see it coming on. I could feel this." And I teach them not just to calm their body down when they're getting anxious. I teach them how to be calmer people in general. You know, and you know,
Got
for me, you know, you and I are people of faith. You know, I always say, well, what am I worried about here? The Lord's going to take care of this. He moves mountains, and I got a little speck that I'm dealing with. I think I'm okay, you know? So it's about getting that body where it needs to be first. That's the bottom line.
Wow. Oh, that is so enlightening, certainly. Now, let's talk about the shape of the world today. It seems to be in a place where it literally has never been before. Just how bad of a problem is anxiety in this world? And in today's turbulent, exciting, challenging workplace.
Yeah, you're talking about anxiety in context. And the context we have is a world that is intense, ambiguous. We don't have defined parameters anymore. It's going at lightning speed. There is such pressure to produce. And we want everyone to be like we want them to be. And that's never going to happen. So we're really setting ourselves up to be unhappy people, and it's, we're back to that. Slow down a little bit. Yeah, the things that we're talking about in the world, slow it down, organize your thinking a little bit, stop putting so much pressure on yourself. Those all the things that create anxiety. So what we're talking about on a worldly level is what we need to do on an individual level.
This is really fascinating. Speaking of fascinating, this book of yours is really something, the Fix Your Anxiety Handbook, Frost. How did this great book come about? We love stories. Tell us the story of this book, please.
You know, it is, first of all, it's part of a series. I wrote the flagship book, the Fix Yourself Handbook, 3 years ago, published it, and it did so well. And in that book, I have 36 chapters of 36 different themes. I help people work with. And then now I'm branching out and just taking one theme at a time. So we're doing anxiety. We just published anxiety. Fix Your Depression Handbook is coming next. That actually could be published by the end of the year. But the Fix Your Anxiety Handbook, all this comes out of my private practice, the things I do with people. You know, they've worked so well with me for 30 years. I thought, at this stage of my career, the kids are all grown. They're out of the house. I'm not doing that. I have time to write. And so I'm just putting what I did with people into a text format so other people can read that. Some people won't go to counseling. It'll help them. Some people, it'll be a precursor for counseling. So, it's all part of that whole counseling theory that I use.
Wow. Now, this is fascinating. I know we have some listeners who have been thinking about writing a book. I published a book last year, and it was a labor of love, but it certainly wasn't easy. Might you have a tip or two for anyone maybe in our listeners today who just can't get started? They have it in their heart, but they just don't know what to do first.
It's like anything else you do. If you're going to decide you're going to make a change in your life and you want to now do something a little bit bigger, the first thing you do is you become an expert in terms of the landscape, if you will. So my first thing I did before, I saw it on a podcast, I talked to other authors, they said, get to know the publishing industry first. There's a way that industry runs, learn it. Then know what you're going to do when you're going to write a book. When I write now, you know, I finished, we published this book, I think it was June 9th, and I already had the outline for the next book going. I outline every chapter I'm going to write. I have the title, a subtitle. I do an inspirational quote with that, and then I go into the text. And then at the end, I have my action steps, because it's great to give people information, but then there should be a point where you say, now that you have the information, do these things. So what I tell people is, have your outline, know exactly what each chapter is supposed to look like. When you get done writing your book, edit it, you know, so it's presentable, and then you're going to need a copy editor. And that they're out there. I have a marvelous copy editor who not only said, gee, you're a good writer, but let me teach you how to write for publication. So now I know what the publishing industry likes in their format. So I have that. I have an illustrator who does things. So in other words, I put a team together. Wow. You can go with agents if you want to. They are very difficult to work with, or you can self-publish. But if you self-publish and you want your book to do well, then you're going to get a publicist, you know, and and they don't come cheap, but they get out and they get all these interviews and all these things that promote your book. So it is a process. And once you learn it, do what you're supposed to do. You know, it's just like you went to school to do what you're doing. It's not like you get up, if you're going to be a preacher, you're not going to get up on the pulpit and say, well, let me just start in. They taught you what you're supposed to do. Here are the specifics relevant to what you're going to do or to teach or whatever it is. You know, there are specifics involved here. And as you learn them, then you transition well and you don't resist things, you know, and you don't put pressure on yourself.
What a great analogy, because I know myself in transitioning from 30 years in Big Pharma to becoming a Franciscan Brother of Brooklyn, there was a formation process, and it was a rather long formation process. It just didn't happen overnight.
Right.
So anyone who wants to write a book, don't fret. Certainly you can do it. But as Faust so wonderfully says, learning the process, learning those key steps, getting the team assembled, really, really important. I have a question, Voss, that I don't want to ask, but I really have to ask, because unfortunately, there still seems to exist a terrible stigma that defines an anxious person as emotionally unstable. Your book, it looks to me, attempts to remove this stigma. How do you try to do this, please?
Well, you know what? That's the question everyone has asked for so long. The stigma, I'm crazy. It's a mental health thing. It is a physical disorder. If you said to me, you know what? They diagnosed me with diabetes. And they said, well, now I can't eat this. And diabetes can cause some depression and anxiety sometimes. Am I mentally ill because I have diabetes? No, it's a physical condition. So is your anxiety. It's physical first. Get the something's wrong with my brain out of the picture. When anxiety hits, it takes your body, accelerates it, and activates all these nerves, this nervous energy that you didn't have. When that happens, your emotions are going to fire fast. So you're going to look like you're overreacting, and you may be. And your brain is getting so much stimulus at one time that it can't process it all. But it's all coming from a physical source. You know, when I wrote the book, I call it the anxiety demon. And the reason I did that is I want people to look at it as something other than who they are. I keep saying anxiety is not who you are. It's what you have. It's a physical condition you have. No stigma anymore. It's, hey, my body's not doing well with this. Let me go get my body in order. That's what you're talking about. And if you do, your emotions and your brain follow.
One of the things that drew me to you and your book, on the bottom of the cover, anxiety is not who you are. It's a condition you have. There is a way out of your anxiety, and this is that way. Just so captivating. And I should have mentioned before, our listeners know I'm a terrible reader, but your team and you did such a good job with this book, even I could read it, enjoy it, understand it, learn from it, apply it, certainly.
My books are designed for non-readers.
Because
I did that on purpose. And as you know, the chapters are somewhere between 4 and 6, maybe 7 pages. That's a chapter. You're going to get the title. You're going to get some inspiration. You're going to get about 5 or 6 pages of the information you need. Most people can sit for 15 minutes and read 5 pages on a computer. Sure. And then you're going to find 6 or 7 steps. Now, here's the information. Then I say, just do these things. And they say, okay. You know, it's sort of other self-help books. It's sort of like it's like an advertisement. They give you all the information and they don't give you the instructions. Now you can't put your erector set together. You know, you got all the pieces left and it's wobbling. You know, give the people the information, short, concise, to the point, no nonsense. And then give them exactly what they have to do. It works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, maybe this is a bit of an unfair question. I don't know if every individual, many individuals are different in the physical signs they get that they're suffering from anxiety, or are there some common symptoms or signs, Foss, if even I'm asking that correctly? Help us out here, Frank.
Yeah, the common symptom, the first I alluded to before, was the accelerated body pace. For some people, they'll feel it. I have people who feel it in their stomach first. They know when their stomach begins to tighten, so to speak, oh my God, the anxiety is coming. Some people will experience it in confused thinking. You know, all of a sudden, that's what went for all the symptoms. You know, they miss the body parts and they go right to the brain. Or I'm reacting all over the place today and they don't realize it's anxiety. Emotions, you know, when you look back to that old, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, we have the physical on the bottom. What comes next? Emotional, intellectual, spiritual. So physical always comes first. The next level, one up from that primal level, are the emotions, which are kind of half primal, half intellectual. They intercede between the body and the brain. Then the brain comes up and tries to work everything out for us. If we do that and we get there, we get to the higher order, the pinnacle, which is the spiritual. So physical first, regardless of what presents itself. If you have anxiety, you know, just because you've had it so many times, you get an idea how that progression is. You don't just say, my God, I just stepped into anxiety. There may be a half hour, there may be an hour, there may be a couple days where it's setting itself up. You get to know those things, but it's all about that body. And again, if I teach people, you know, I teach people to do breathing exercises every day, even if you're not in anxiety, slow your breathing down.
Wow.
That's huge. Some people will meditate or go into prayer. When you do that, do it with your breathing exercise. So you're doing something intellectual associated with your body and you're staying right in the moment. What's the key of staying in the moment? When you're anxious, your mind goes, oh my God, what if? Well, you won't do that if you stay right in the moment that you're supposed to stay in. If you focus on your breathing, focus on your yoga or your prayer or whatever it is, and you keep on doing that every day, your body has an everyday component, a practice, if you will, that soothes you. It's sort of like the analogy is if people come to me in marriage counseling and they say, we're not communicating well. I'm not going to be able to teach them just communicate well when you want to argue because you have no communicative foundation. So what I'm going to teach them is how to communicate well all the time. Anxiety is no different. If you don't want to get anxious, learn how to treat your body the right way every day. Learn how to talk to yourself kindly. Stop saying, I'm a failure and I'm not going to be able to do this. And I know this is going to work out horribly. Begin to be a little bit more positive in the way you talk to yourself. They're just basic things you do every day. And that those stand right in the way of anxiety. It's like a wall for your anxiety after a while.
Yeah, this is so helpful to the listeners and I, because one of the things I perceive from this great book of yours is that anxiety could actually alter the way people feel about themselves. Do I perceive that, Bob?
Absolutely. Sure.
Share with us more about that, please.
Well, look at it this way. Let's say we're gonna go to some event. You and I are both gonna be keynote speakers, and you're there, nice and calm. You seem to be looking at everything well, and you can't wait to get up there. And I'm saying, oh my God, this is gonna fail. I know I'm gonna mess up. I won't remember what I'm doing. I might cry and run off the stage. I'm doing all these things to myself. Now I'm talking to myself, and I'm what am I saying? I'm weak, inefficient, and I can't do the job. And then before you know it, you've talked yourself over the years, you talked yourself into believing you're the weak, incompetent person, and there's your self-image and there's your self-esteem down the tubes, if you will. But on the other hand, if you're saying, no, I'm going to do the best I can, I think I can get this. If I don't, I have some things to fix, but I'll learn it. And you're always working with that in mind, it's okay. And if you get a failure, what's a failure? It's an opportunity to learn to do better. It depends on how you interpret it. You know, failure is where you trip and fall, you pick yourself up, dust yourself off and say, okay, I know what I tripped over there. I'm going to work so I don't have to do that. It's a matter of the way you think about yourself. And if you're always concerned, you're always afraid, and you're always, you know, got that physical anxiety coming up, you think you're weaker than the next person. And then, of course, we're masters at comparison. So, oh my, you know, that person does it so much better than I do. Of course, we don't know what their demons are, but we decided that they're better than we are. Wow. And now we talk ourselves into believing that we are not measuring up. And then you know what that does? Not only does it make it feel terrible about ourselves, it's an open door for the anxiety to keep on coming through, because it's not what you have anymore, it's who you are.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing this, because I know for the listeners and for me, these thoughts are really need to be reinforced about how we need to be positive and we need to be more gentle with ourselves, and just how this anxiety can just take us over and become who we are if we're not careful, no doubt about that. Now, I love this book, as I said before, for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons you talked about was certainly these nice, short, concise chapters. One of the chapters is entitled Change as Growth Alley. I had a chuckle because sometimes we're so fearful of change. I never heard it said, though, as a growth alley. Is that really, I mean, share more of us more about that, please, that change actually is growth?
Change always leads to growth because it's the process of change. People worry, think about, when I get there, I'm not going to like that, or I'm so happy the way I am, and they have their comfort zones. The first important point to understand is the way the brain works. Our brain has so much conscious energy that it has to use, so it wants to get as much kind of on autopilot, so to speak, if you will. So it's the routine things that happen every day. But that autopilot creates these little comfort zones that are stagnant. We're in them every day. We repeat them. They don't challenge us. We like it. It's easy, you know. And then a little change comes along and we say, oh, there's two things happening. One, I'm going to leave that thing I love so much, and then I got to put effort into this thing. And when I get there, I'm not even sure I'm going to like it. So now we resist change. And we want to talk about bringing on anxiety. It's like someone trying to pull you off. You can feel them pulling you off your safe space. You're resisting. You're getting angry and frustrated and emotional, and you don't want to do it. But if you don't do that and you say, let me try this, what happens on the way? There are three or four or five things that happen that you say, I didn't think about that. I can do that. I never thought I could do that. I just learned something completely new. And when I got there, it wasn't a monster. It's my ally. It can be a life ally. I'm not saying you change every day all the time, but when you have the opportunity, you look at things. It's just like writing your book. You can write from your comfort zone, which is, I just get my computer out and start typing, and then someone reads it and says, huh? Or you can learn the publishing industry, make all those changes. That's in and of itself is a change, because it pulls you out of the, I'm just going to start writing because I have my book in my brain, to I have to now slow the process down and learn all these things. And now I'm going to, I remember when I wrote the first book and I sent it to the copy editor, and it was sort of like when I was in grammar school, and Sister Catherine came over and said, oh no, that's all wrong, and wrote all the red things, you know, and I wanted to just get her and pull that you know, just what did you get? And I looked and I said, I have two options here. I can make my copywriter my best friend and really go with the flow and learn off my safe space, or I can resist it and make her my monster. I chose the second. I had to make changes in the way I wrote that manuscript.
Oh.
Life is a manuscript, if you will. We keep putting things on it. But every now and then, someone changes the text. And we can learn from it, or we can get very anxious and dig our heels in and scream and cry and feel horrible about what inevitably is going to be forced on us anyway.
Oh, that is
the pandemic hit, and everyone said, how are you going to do this? And I said, I'm going to go with the flow. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, what other option is there? I can't leave the house, or I have to wear a mask and or gloves, and I can't do all these social things. I have to change the way I'm doing things.
Wow.
Fortunately, I had a big office that had one exit, an entrance in and an exit out, so I could see people, and I set them 12 feet away, and we wore masks, and I counseled, and we made the changes. Other people said, I can't believe this. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to fall apart. I hate it in my house. And And I just said, you hate it in the place you live. We resist all this change, where if we just say, you don't have to go with the flow completely. Just say, I'm not going to resist it. I'm going to take a look at it. I'm going to see what it has to offer. And I'm going to make some decisions. That's all. Stop overreacting to change. The neurosis that brings on, the anxiety it initiates, is tremendous. Take a step back. Look at what's there. Say, what do I want to do with this? Let me see what I can do with this. I just may learn, I may become more powerful once I learn this other thing that I can learn.
Oh, wow. That is absolutely awesome. Sadly, we've only got about 6 minutes, and I still have some important questions to ask you. I perceive that your great book really presents healing from anxiety as a journey that can be incorporated into the reader's healthy movement through the condition into a life packed with positive energy. From what you've said in this great book, am I perceiving correctly? Is that what this is really all about, Foster?
You are right on the mark. Everything I do, everything I write about, and I write this in my introductions, everything I do is a journey. Life is dynamic. It changes all the time. We have a timeline. We are introduced into the world. We have a time where we leave the physical world. Okay. So it's a constant journey. You start at point A, you go to point B, and it stops. In that period of time, it's a journey. It's a day by day journey. And we like to be destination people. Well, when I get there, I'll feel that much better. No, you won't, because you don't even know what there is going to be like when you get there. Learn how to live in today, in your moments. Make your moments today count, and your journey will be a wonderful place to be. You know, in terms of faith, you really have to be able to say, the Lord put me on a journey. I have things I'm going to do. If I stay right where I am and do what I'm supposed to do every day, He takes care of all of it. And then I learn how to take care of all of that. I learn how to maximize all the breaths He gave me, if you will. And wow. And that's what you do. You stay and you make every day good, and stop thinking about, you know, it's July and I'm going to go to the shore. And when we go to the shore, I'm going to be so great. And I'm going to say, yeah, and that 7 days, which now costs about $5,000, is going to end. And you are going to come home in debt from your $5,000 vacation and pay your bills and start all over again and feel miserable. No. Life's a journey. Make every day a gift. Live it as the gift it is.
Oh, that's so awesome. Do you have a recommendation? I know we're in National Wellness Month, as we said before, the month of August. How should our listeners spend the rest of National Wellness Month? Any thought there, bro?
You know, going with the theme I was just talking about, be positive. It's wellness. It's not National Unwellness Month. We have a tendency to say, my mental health, and something's wrong with my mental health. Try to be positive and stop going to the negative side. Stop worrying about your mental health. It's wellness. Do what you want to do. Do what you need to do to feel good. Take the advice we're giving. Make every day count. That's what wellness is. It's to be well. It's not to be unwell. And we have become a nation that thinks about how unwell we are. And one of the most powerful, most a nation with the most abundant gifts in the world, and we don't have what we need. We've become these entitled people who have to have what we want, and we don't have it, and now we don't feel good. And slow down, simplify your life day to day, take a breath, and just be happy with what you have. Focus on your needs, not all your desires. You'll be fine.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because in the class that I teach at St. Francis College, we do a little exercise, needs versus wants. And it is so enlightening for the students. I remember the first time I did it, how enlightening it was for me as well. And as you say, what do we need? What do we desire? How do we differentiate the two and to simplify? Oh, what great, great advice, certainly.
In my first book, I do a chapter on living life simple. And I actually tell people, make your lists in life of all the things you absolutely need, and then one with your desires. When I counsel people and I say, make a list of all your needs, they put desires on their needs.
Oh,
which is wow. Something that I say, well, wait a minute. What if that got taken away from you? Was taken away? What, could you live? Well, of course. Then it's not a need, it's a want. What do you need? You need to eat. You need to breathe. You need shelter. You need safety. Those are those core things you need. The rest of it, it's window dressing.
Absolutely.
You don't need Facebook. You don't need a new iPhone, and you got one last year. You don't need new wardrobes and vacations. These are desires.
Wow.
But since we interpret them like needs, when we don't have them, then the feeling we get is that we lost a need. We actually overapply the emotion to represent a need when it really is about a desire. Our desires are killing us.
Oh, wow. That is so, so empowering, that statement. Voss, we've saved the most important question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase the Fix Your Society Handbook? How can they best follow you, please?
Best way to get to me is really, I'm on all the social media, but go to my website, FosterGerald.com. It has everything about the books, everything about me. You can actually see excerpts from the books and decide, gee, do I want to buy this book? There's a contact link there if they want to contact me. I'm very good about getting back to people. And by all means, you know, everyone just feel free to do that.
Listeners, no excuse at all. Let me spell for you Foss' name. It's Foss, F-A-U-S-T, and the last name, R-U-G-G-I-E-R-O. We have a great Franciscan with us today. He could have held on to all this good. No, he wrote this great book. He shared the good. He came on Thank God for Monday, shared more good today. Do yourself a huge favor. Buy this book, one for yourself, and this makes an awesome gift. Buy a couple of more and spread the good, share the good, just like Foss did with us today. Foss, we can't thank you enough for coming on Thank God for Monday today. Yes, we've been enlightened. We've been a lot more inspired. Continued success, happiness, joy, and contribution, and all those many, many great works that you're doing literally all over the world.
It's been my pleasure. And to you and all the listeners, you know, stay close to the Lord. Let him bless you. You will be better if you do that. In the meantime, one day at a time, and you know, and just live and enjoy.
Amen to that. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Foss does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.